Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind for the week after the election. But first, wist I was there. Emotional testimony in a public hearing on proposed Kimberly-Clark tax breaks. DNR's big game ecologist says, yeah, there are a few hunters in Wisconsin, but the drop is bigger nationally. A Capitol reporter doubts that the Senate will vote on the pre-existing conditions bill. And let's hear from two women elected as assistant leaders of their parties in the assembly. Wish I was there.
Kimberly Clark does not care about its employees. Kimberly Clark only cares about its bottom line and what it can give to the shareholders. The federal government gave them a ton of money, and they used that to buy back stocks. This has got to stop. It's got to stop in the state, and it's got to stop in the country. Corporate greed is overrunning this, and we'll be left behind with the scraps.
Our numbers of hunters are down, and that is a national trend. So this isn't just a Wisconsin thing. I think you're seeing that in every single state. The good thing about Wisconsin is that we still have, I believe we have like 895,000 hunters in Wisconsin.
Yes.
That our trends are not dropping to the same rate as they are in other states. Ours are dropping less.
Pre-existing conditions, Mr. Boss said that's a top priority for the lame duck session.
Senator Fitzgerald said there are still some members of his caucus that are not comfortable with that bill, which is why they didn't pass it before. So it doesn't seem like anything's changed. She hasn't said who those members are, but it doesn't. They're talking about wanting to do something, but I don't see a lot of movement on it.
I know that this year is going to be challenging. We've all heard that. And I know that Robin and Jim are going to spend the majority of their time playing chess with the executive office. Even though they may be playing checkers, they're going to be very consumed. And I just want to really take this opportunity to say that myself and my office, our staff, we want to help you guys be successful. And hopefully by having a middle-class white female in the leadership, we can start having those tough conversations with the groups that we are upside down with, and we'll make a little bit of difference.
So in this election cycle, we've seen a historic number of women running across the entire United States. And it's important for us to note that in our caucus, the Assembly Democrats, out of the 36 people with the election of Robin Vining last week, 18 of them are women. Finally. Finally. And I'm so glad to be able to think about that number and work with both the men and the women in this caucus are fantastic, but finally to be at parity is very amazing.
Governor-elect Evers named the first key people around him, the Praetorian Guard, if you will, in terms of now he's hearing from all the people who he once was friends with, never was friends with. They all want positions. So let's put up a list of the appointments that he made last week. First, Maggie Gow, Chief of Staff. Give me your bio, or pedigree.
Former legislative aide, joined the Evers campaign from the legislature. She's also worked on campaigns before. I mean, it's kind of almost standard practice that when you're the challenger, mm-hmm. if you win, your campaign manager becomes your chief of staff. So that wasn't a big surprise, but something she earned by guiding the campaign.
So she is the Keith Jokes 8 years later?
Yep.
Okay. Joanne Anton, Transition Team Director. She was on the staff of Senator Cole. She was running, maybe she'll go back to running, the philanthropic organization of Senator Cole.
Yeah.
Any PSs on Joanne Anton?
If you look at the whole package, one thing people wondered was, would it be Doyle 2.0? Because Jim Doyle, the last Democrat to be governor, the people who've done this before were Doyle aides, and there was some fear among Democrats that would be like what you saw. This is not a shadow Jim Doyle government. This is people who have ties to Herb Kohl, ties to education, to manufacturing, to healthcare. So it is a different path for Evers that maybe helps send a message about where he's going to go with this thing.
Okay, now let's go to Chuck Prewitt, former president of the Board of Regents,
mm-hmm.
and a very close to former Governor Jim Doyle.
Also from Coal World, he's got ties to Herb Kohl as well, and a lot of Democrats. He's been around for a long time.
So he checks the box on higher ed, and Amy Traynor from Eau Claire, former middle school teacher of the year, she's in the wheelhouse for our K-12 debate, correct?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. Then Dr. Veronica Gunn and Kevin Conroy check the box on healthcare, or am I overstating it?
No, and Kevin Conroy is somebody who had been looked at to run for public office before by folks, has passed on running before, so he's got a little bit, not really a political background, but somebody who's been obviously observing politics or being close to it for a while.
And Jan Allman, the CEO of Marinette Marine, manufacturing background?
Mm-hmm. Also checks off a lot of boxes geographically, right? Marinette, up northeast, Eau Claire out west, some Madison, Milwaukee people.
Five women, two men. Mm-hmm. Pretty impressive.
This is the first iteration of what we're going to see. The big thing is for Evers is, what's this cabinet going to look like? Is it going to be a lot of former legislators or current legislators who taps for various things? Is it going to be looking at academics or professionals outside of the political class? The thing about Tony Evers is, like, Scott Walker had a ready-made administration from his days as county executive in Milwaukee County. So he could bring his trusted advisors from Milwaukee to Madison and run state government. Jim Doyle, before Walker, had this kind of set up over at the Department of Justice with the Attorney General, where he had built, you know, this kind of network of advisors. He helped bring those folks over to state government, and then he tapped a network of Harvard-educated lawyers, not all of them, but a lot of them, to fill up his cabinet. What is Tony Evers going to do? And it's going to set a tone for his administration. Is it going to be political? Is it going to be outside the box? What's he going to do? Remember, Evers, while like Doyle, he ran an agency, DPI is a different kind of beast in some ways. It's supposed to be a nonpartisan agency about education. It's a much different kind of background, so it might be a much different kind of cabinet.
But the closing 3 points of Tony Evers was K-12 mm-hmm. and higher ed and transportation, which is not represented here among these transition staff. Why not?
I don't know.
Okay.
But I mean, like, what, you don't need to check off the issues. So, I mean, like, transportation is going to be dealt with. But I don't know, like, having a person on, like, the co-chair is, like, a message that we're going to deal with transportation, right?
Okay.
So these are people about, you know, yes, some of his emphasis, but I don't know that's a major omission or anything like that.
Okay. I just find it curious. Okay. Staying with soon-to-be Governor Evers, he's decided that he's not going to formally resign as state mm-hmm. superintendent of public instruction until raising his hand and taking the oath. And talk about the dynamics of that. Why is that an important decision?
Well, it takes the opportunity to make a decision that the next DPS is going to be out of the hands of Governor Walker. So if he resigned before becoming governor, there would be a window for Governor Walker to make a decision. Evers now has several choices in front of him. He can appoint somebody to take the office. He can call a special election. Mm-hmm. There are all kinds of variables about that. When do you call the special election? When would it be held? Could it be concurrent to the 2019 spring election? So there's all kinds of stuff like that to figure out, but he's got some choices ahead of him about what he wants to do.
Okay, now I've not talked to either Mr. Evers' chief of staff or members of the transition team. I'm going to float a name. Do you believe that Republican Senator Luther Olson could be chosen as the next DPI superintendent?
I don't know. I mean, if you just...
Have you heard that name?
No, if you talk generically, like Tommy Thompson was famous for picking off Democratic senators.
Tim Cullen,
don't forget federal judgeship.
Marv Rochelle, go ahead.
But he looked at people in swing seats especially sometimes and moved them into other jobs to help. I don't know if he's going to go that way, but, you know, again, what's the Evers cabinet going to look like? What's he want to do? That's a big question out there still.
Well, going back to members of his transition team, do you see any of them being cabinet secretaries because they've got some pretty high-level jobs right now?
Maybe. It's the what message you want to send, what's the feel going to be, and you hear lots of names. It's the Capitol parlor game right now. Names are floated constantly about, well, this person might fit here. The issue is it could be that person floating his or her name trying to create a buzz to make people think, oh, this person would fit, so maybe he or she's not the cabinet secretary, but they get a lower level position. Yeah, so you got to be kind of careful about the floated names games around right now.
Yeah, you really do. But, however, there were some formal votes taken to name the leadership mm-hmm. in both chambers. So let's talk about the assembly first. Speaker Voss coming back from Burlington. Majority Leader Steinke from Kaukauna. Speaker Pro Tem August from Lake Geneva. Talking about the R's here. The only change, Assistant Majority Leader Fels Kausi from Irma was elected. Caucus Chair Dan Knodel. JFC Chair John Nygren, who we'll talk about later, from Marinette. Then on the Assembly side, Minority Leader Hintz, Gordon Hintz from Oshkosh, Assistant Minority Leader, Hesselbein from Madison, Caucus Chair Spreitzer from Beloit, Caucus Vice Chair Doyle from La Crosse. Let's hear now some of the exchanges as the two assembly leaders were elected. Speeches, from Speaker Voss and Assembly Democratic Leader Hintz. Please.
You name the statistic, and Wisconsin is at the forefront.
That's right.
So our job, more important than anything else, is to not allow any of those statistics under our watch to slide backwards because of backward-looking policies that some of the folks who are going to occupy the East Wing are going to choose to put into place. We're not going to accept that the answer to our problems in Wisconsin is higher taxes. We are not going to accept that the answer to some of our issues is growing the size of government or taking a big old U-turn from our economy's success. Our job is going to be to articulate our message and to make sure that where Governor-elect Evers is right, we stand right next to him and find ways to work together. But where we disagree with him on principle or on policy, we are going to stand like bedrock to guarantee that Wisconsin does not go back. Let's just remember that while Governor Evers had a win on Tuesday, he certainly did not get a mandate. A mandate does not happen with winning only 30,000 more votes out of millions cast. He won the election, and we will find ways to work together, but we are not going to roll over and play dead.
The election of Tony Evers is important for a number of reasons. Obviously, it's a safeguard against going backwards and doing any further damage to the state. It means that we can depoliticize state agencies. You've already seen optimism in places like the Department of Natural Resources. And we can ensure that the priorities of healthcare and K-12 education remain priorities going forward. Even more importantly, the election of Tony Evers ensures that we won't have rigged maps again in 2022. Remember, every Democrat running statewide in Wisconsin won, yet Democrats ended up losing or winning one legislative seat. And that is exactly what the maps were designed to ensure. We have a younger caucus, we have a more diverse caucus, and now we have the opportunity to create an agenda that harnesses the energy of these new members and reflects the changing demographics of our state.
These 10 assembly leaders all have in common this: none of them are from Milwaukee, our city's largest, state's largest city. Why not?
Well, there are a couple things. One, you do have in the assembly Democratic leadership, Christine Sinicki, who's a sergeant at arms, if I remember correctly. And there are some other people, like Dan Knoll's from the Milwaukee area. But in winning leadership, it's not a popularity contest. It is a what have you done for me contest. These lawmakers build up chips. They give them and they get them. So when I go do doors for you in your district, I earn a chip from you. Mm-hmm. When I give you money in a contested race, you got a tight contest and I'm making donations to you, that earns me a chip from you. So when it comes time for the elections, those chips are cashed in. If you look, there was one contested race in the Assembly GOP.
Yes.
That was Felskowski winning an open seat.
Right.
On the Democratic side, there were two challenges, one to Hesselbein by David Crowley from Milwaukee.
African-American from Milwaukee.
Argued for more diversity.
He argued for diversity, excuse me.
Lisa Subek challenged Steve Doyle for caucus vice chair. But again, I haven't looked at their finance reports or what they've done to help the caucus, but it's not a popularity contest. It is, again, how you helped me contest.
Did you help me do doors in Oshkosh?
Yeah, and Robin Voss, you know, people complain about Voss every now and then as speaker. I mean, anytime you have an organization that large, you're going to have factions. But Voss keeps winning and raising money. As long as he does that, well, he's going to keep being speaker. And oh, by the way, if he ever catches wind that you're going to try and challenge him, he will make sure that you pay a price for that. And that's the way politics works.
Right. And that speech that we heard from Voss might have been
laying down a marker,
thinking about running for governor in 4 years, but that is a long, long ways away. Okay, let's look at leadership elected in the state Senate. Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, what intrigues me, J.R., he will have been Majority Leader if he completes the next term for almost 12 years.
Yeah, minus a six-month period when they lost control after the recalls in 2012.
Right. And then you have Senate President Roger Roth returning. Mm-hmm. I was a little surprised that the new Assistant Majority Leader is Dan Fine because he's a first-termer. Mm-hmm. He's going to take the leadership spot vacated by Leah Vukmir. And then the caucus chair is Van Wongard out of Racine again. And JFC, Senator Darling, will be back as co-chair on the Democratic side. Minority Leader Schilling from La Crosse, Assistant Minority Leader Bewley from Mason, way up north, Caucus Chair Miller, Senator Miller of Madison, Caucus Vice Chair Janice Ringhan. Same question, what do all these have in common? None from Milwaukee.
Scott Fitzgerald, one reason why he's still majority is nobody else can do the job in that caucus. Well, I mean, maybe they could. I don't think Bolsa wants it or can do as well as Fitz does. I mean, and people don't kind of understand Fitz's style at times. He lets the caucus find its level, then comes in as the closer. He is not like Robin Voss, who leads that caucus in the battle and like he's the one carrying the flag. He's the one who knows that you can't do that with that caucus. So he's got a touch with those guys that works. Another thing to note is in the Democratic side, no changes. Even though they only gained one seat in the Assembly and lost one in the Senate,
right.
No changes. The rallying cry kind of was, it was the maps. Now, I can't tell you that it's only the maps. I mean, there are other reasons that go into this, all right?
Okay. A chunk of it is it's the maps, but it's not the only reason. Excuse me. Go ahead.
I mean, Howard Markline has a seat that I'm waiting for the final breakdown of numbers to look at, like, district by district. But looking at the counties in his district, they went for Tony Evers and Tammy Baldwin. Todd Novak in the Assembly, same deal. So there are seats that, you know, places with the top pick did better than the Assembly and Senate did. But there are a couple of things to that. One, the Assembly Dems were starved for resources. The focus was obviously on the Senate governor's race because if you're a donor, where would you invest? Those two places, because you have a chance to win the governor's race and really flip the Senate. That's where the money went. Two, the 2020 elections, probably if what we saw last week is a harbinger of things to come, it's all going to be about the suburbs of Milwaukee. If you're a Democrat, why are you going to spend money in western northern Wisconsin when you saw Marathon County go 59% for Scott Walker last week? When you look at that map in the governor's race, it is like blue in the southwestern corner, blue in Kenosha and Milwaukee, all red other than Eau Claire and Menominee County.
And that was part of Felskowski's speech.
Yep.
Women like me, we need to appeal to.
And then the top 2-3 tiers of the state were blue too.
Yeah.
But if you're a Democrat looking for legislative races, you're going to focus on those suburban seats because that's where Republicans have a problem. And Donald Trump, by the way, don't forget this about 2020. There'll be no statewide race in Wisconsin other than Donald Trump and, well, assuming he runs for election, and the Democratic challenger. That means no governor's race, no Senate race, anything. That may more tie those races to the national environment in Wisconsin. What's that going to mean? If you are a Republican, it could cause you heartburn about the Milwaukee suburbs. Mm-hmm. If you're a Democrat, it could exacerbate your issue with the rural areas of Wisconsin. So just something, you know, I mean, 2 years is a lifetime in politics, but something to watch in 2020, where the truly contested races next time.
Okay, and I want to come back to something we have said. We still don't know the agenda of the lame duck session that's going to play out here over the next 5 weeks. But one of the big issues is Kimberly Clark, and that was the subject of a very intense, emotional, and at one point Senator Olson asked a Kimberly Clark executive, what would you save? But let's hear that exactly from both. Let's hear that exchange.
If you were to close this plant and then open the one in Arkansas, what would you have saved on this plant?
It's very significant.
How much?
It's very significant.
I know, but how much is that? Because we're looking at giving you money, so we'd sort of like to know what you're going to save if you leave.
I understand.
You're not telling us? If $7.3 million is a spit in the ocean, then what are we doing this for?
What happens if this bill does not pass? What happens up in the Fox Valley? What happens to the plant? Does it close for sure?
We need to know the answer around AB 963 from the state. We did not ask for incentives. We had already made the difficult decision. We had already made the difficult decision and communicated to employees that we were going to close.
All right,
without AB 963, we're back to that same position.
That the plant will close?
We will finalize our decision after we know the decision from the state.
I personally believe that voting no on this bill will cost this state just as much for many years to come, but at the end of 15 years, when this would have been paid for, we'll have absolutely nothing to show for it but lower wages in a broken community. When you become a global leader in the areas of environmental sustainability, compassion, generosity for the underprivileged, and charitable giving, and when you have become a backbone company in this state and you've been doing it for 150 years, then come back and we'll talk.
Okay, JR, now let's list some potential issues that they could vote and vote on in the lame duck session. Mm-hmm. But let's come back to Kimberly Clark. With the opposition from Senator Kapinga, Craig, Nass, and the questions raised by Olson, even though the governor, when he did finally meet with reporters yesterday, asked that the bill passed, dead?
Maybe not yet. Remember, though, remember what Walker said, I'm not going to whip votes to the Democrats. It's up to the unions to do that. If they can't convince them, I'm surely not going to. So there's that issue. Coming out of this hearing, we still don't know a firm vote firm number of votes in the Republican caucus in the Senate, how many they have. So there are three no's. It's 18-15. So even if they could just stop the bleeding right now at three, they need at least two Democrats to vote for the bill. Who are they? Now, where's Luther Olson after the questions he raised this week in the hearing? Where are other members like Leah Vukmir, who ran for U.S. Senate, is going to be leaving after this session is over? Dewey Strobel is a member of the Joint Finance Committee, is one of the member of the conservative wing, along with Craig, Nass, and Kapinga. They're often together on issues. Where is he at on the bill? He hasn't said publicly yet.
Right.
So I just don't know the final count. Then, once you get a hard Republican count, then you need a Democratic count. Well, here's the problem. I just asked Jennifer Schilling's office this morning. She has not been asked by any Republican sponsor of that bill or Fitzgerald for a single vote yet. So what's that mean? If you want Dem votes, you have to ask for them.
It means no, because Evers has said, let's look at an industry-wide approach. That's been the answer given by the Senate Democrats. But I want to focus in on Wisconsin. I didn't get a chance to attend that Walker gaggle yesterday. But he said, I may have reformed myself out of a job. What's left to pass? Those are just two intriguing comments.
Yeah. Well,
you were there.
The governor also
said,
that it was a rejection that he lost last week, which is interesting. He tried to justify that statement by saying, look, we got 30,000 more votes than we did in 2014.
Yeah.
But the other guy still got 30,000 more than you did. That's still a loss. So, you know, losses are difficult. I'm not going to, try and diminish that. But the governor was trying to do a victory lap of sorts about all things that he accomplished in his mind in the 8 years that he was there. Try and say, hey, last week I'm okay with it, but, it wasn't a rejection of what I've done so far.
Okay.
And then he's open to this lame duck session of bills. Now, he tried to downplay what we're talking about. What's interesting is 8 years ago, you and I both covered Democrats trying to pass these union contracts that the Dole administration had reached before the election, well before the election, I believe, if I remember correctly, but had waited on. Come December, the lame duck session of all those contracts.
Russ Decker, no. Jeff Plaley, no.
Jeff Plaley wound up in the Walker administration, by the way.
Railroad commissioner.
That's the only reason why those contracts went down, and also opened the door, by the way, to Scott Walker in Act 10 a few months later. So that's different, though, according to Governor Walker. That was settling people going forward with something, but this is all going to be different. This is about taking things that they've looked at before or codifying things they've already done into state statute rather than having been executive.
Okay, and that's why I want to quickly whip through some of these issues. Do you agree with Molly Beck that we said, who we used in Wisai was there, that they probably won't act on pre-existing conditions? Because I agree with Ms. Beck.
Unless the lawsuit, federal lawsuit, is successful the next 50-some days,
yes,
and it's thrown out and there's no appeal and the Affordable Care Act is dead, maybe. But until then, there's no way that I see Republicans coming to take up that bill.
There's no critical mass in the Senate for that. But I do predict that they will limit the number of gubernatorial appointees to the Wisconsin Economic Development Corp. Speaker Voss says, we're going to preserve Foxconn. Mm-hmm. And Wiedek, even though Mr. Evers wants to get rid of it, is going to stay around. What about, you also committed some journalism, 150 appointments pending in the Senate?
Yeah, including Rich Zipper, a PSC commissioner, who was Walker's former chief of staff.
Right.
So, it's like, what do you do with these? Because if they're not confirmed, Evers can walk in on day one and say, you guys are all out. Now, with Zipper, for example, his term ends, I think, March or May 1st, one of the two, I'm sorry, I can't remember which M month it is. So it only extends it by a couple of 3-4 months, even if he's confirmed, barring any other action. But other folks, like you're talking, there are some people on these boards that went into 2023 and 25, I think.
Yeah.
would go well beyond Evers' first term.
Right.
So what do they do with those? Are they,
and there's no point in confirming the corrections secretary because she's not going to be reappointed.
Ellen Novak is the administrator. She also has been approved by the Senate, so there's no real rush on that.
Okay, quickly, because we're running short on time. The governor and Speaker Voss talked about changing the date of the 2020 presidential primary to help Justice Kelly survive.
Well, they're not saying to help Justice Kelly, but that's what it's, that would do.
Okay.
Because you're looking at 2020, you're going to have a contested primary for president for Democrats, most likely. But not likely one for Republicans. So that means we have more Dems turnout in the April ballot than Republicans. So that's tough for Justice Kelly. So the idea is move the presidential primary to March, which would, oh, by the way, add untold millions of dollars to local election officials to put on a whole new statewide election.
Right.
But they're going to justify it saying that this is a partisan race that shouldn't be affecting nonpartisan contests. But you and I both know that Supreme Court races aren't truly nonpartisan, right?
Right, and I got this bridge that, okay, never mind. Okay, quickly, before we get the stock picks. DPI report card, 96% of 422 public school districts met or exceeded expectations. 84% of schools that were rated, that's important because some choice schools were not rated, met or exceeded expectations. But the gap, the racial gap in four-year graduation rates just persists. So just a couple examples before we get to your stock pick. If you're an African-American student in Milwaukee Public Schools, 58% graduate in 4 years. And let's compare that to in Madison, African-American graduation rate 72%. But perhaps the biggest disparity, if you're a Caucasian student in Madison School District, the odds are 91% that you'll graduate in 4 years. And that's a big gap. 58% graduation rate for African Americans, MPS, 91% Caucasian. So this just shows that got some work to do.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to your stock picks.
All right, so rising, so Alberta Darling and John Nygren, replanned co-chairs of finance. Interesting note for you. Next session will be Alberta Darling's sixth chairing the finance committee, which will tie her with Walter Hollander, a Republican from Rosendale.
He even predated me. Go ahead.
Who co-chaired the committee from the 63-64 session to 73-74. Now, Nygren and Darling also will chair the committee together for four straight terms.
Yes.
Never happened before.
Yep.
For the committee, it dates back to 1911. They have been tied with, here a couple of blasts in the past, Alfred Levigson, Republican of Heartland, and Foster Porter, a Republican of Bloomington, who led the JFC for three sessions starting in 1949, but had a break between the second and third term. So the four terms is a record for the committee.
Right. Okay. And mixed.
So Robin and Voss, look, the coverage of the attempts to codify these Republican actions didn't go the way Robin wanted it to. It made it sound like it's a power grab. But he's trying to say, no, that's sensationalizing the headlines. But the initial rollout didn't go very well. The bottom line, though, is Robin Voss is trying to position himself as the conservative foil to Tony Evers. He wants to be, from people I talk to, the most powerful Republican in the Capitol, make that speaker's position the second most powerful job in the building next to the governor's office, and be the one leading the charge against Governor Evers. That's going to be a fascinating thing to watch how that plays out, because don't forget, you know, Robin Voss is known for his strategy, known for winning elections, and Tony Evers is kind of new to the job. We're going to have to watch how that plays out. There are Dems who worry, you know, will Voss steamroll Evers, or can Evers find some kind of enforcer who's going to push the speaker back?
Because remember in that clip, Mr. Voss said, we will not go back. Mm-hmm. Okay, falling.
Kimberly Clark, so we talked a little about, like, what's going on. Look, I've been asking about this for weeks and months. What's the path? And the only path I've heard, and it's not a very narrow one or wide one, is this. You have to stop the bleeding of the Republicans. So we got three public no's, maybe a fourth. Stop it there. The unions now are calling Democrats, urging them to vote for this thing. You've got to find the Dem votes to get it done. The only other oh, and by the way, maybe Republicans say get Governor like Tony Evers to say he's for the bill. Now, the pushback from Democrats is this. It's not our problem. It's your bill. You wrote it. You, Republicans, control both houses of the legislature and the governor's office until January. If you want this done, you guys get it done. Why are you punting on us all the time? Governor Walker this week said, you know, I'm not going to whip the Democrats. It's the unions to do. They keep punting this. It's not our responsibility. It's yours. Dems don't like that. The only other option is to find a new bill that gets Democrats involved. And I don't know if there's time to do that.
I don't think there is.
That path is very narrow. And the hearing this week, if it was supposed to build support for that bill, didn't do its job.
Okay, we got 5 seconds. I want to ask you this question. The canvass and attorney general, any chance of a recount? What are you hearing?
Unless it gets really close, no. It dropped A week ago, a little bit, but not enough. I mean, even if it's 0.25% in that race, our recounts in Wisconsin are taking the ballots, going back to the machine.
Yeah.
Unless you find a bag of ballots that weren't counted or do hand-to-hand combat of every rejected ballot in the state, it's not going to change the result.
I'm Steve Walters.
I'm J.R. Ross.
And just this note, we're going to take a week off. Happy Thanksgiving to you
Same
and your family.
Yours.
We'll be back November 30th. That's Rewind for November 16th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.